Hello and welcome to Fidelity Connects, the Fidelity Investments Canada podcast, ranked number one podcast by Canadian financial advisors in the 2021 Environics Advisor Digital Experience Study. Host Pamela Ritchie is joined today by portfolio manager Darren Lekkerker for a fall 2021 outlook for Canada and the United States. For Canadian investors, Darren manages Fidelity North American Equity Class and manages the equity sub-portfolio of Fidelity Canadian Balance Fund, among other mandates. Looking at inflation, Darren explains that in the Fed's September meeting, they increased their views on what inflation would be this year and next, and expects we'll continue to hear lots about supply chain problems and pressure on raw materials. Darren poses two questions centered on inflation: what stocks can benefit from inflation, and do the high-quality stocks he owns have the pricing power to cover the costs of inflation? Darren also co-manages Fidelity Global Natural Resources Fund, and he looks at some recent news surrounding natural gas. Darren and Pamela also discuss digital infrastructures, mergers and acquisitions, gold, supply chains, and how software and information services companies currently have strong pricing power. This podcast was recorded on September 23rd, 2021. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of Fidelity Investments Canada ULC or its affiliates. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment, tax, or legal advice. It is not an offer to sell or buy, or an endorsement, recommendation, or sponsorship of any entity or security cited. Read a fund's prospectus before investing. Funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently, and past performance may not be repeated. Fees, expenses, and commissions are all associated with fund investments.
This is, it seems, globally central bank week, and obviously the Fed we heard from yesterday. Your thoughts of how you frame the discussion around inflation for your own purposes, for your own investing purposes?
Sure. Inflation is a very topical theme in the market right now. And you're right, the Fed in the September meeting just kind of increased their views on what inflation would be this year and next year. I spent a lot of time in company meetings, and almost in a lot of company meetings, depending on the sector, definitely industrials, consumer, I hear a lot about supply chain problems as well as pressure on raw materials. So there definitely is a lot of inflation in the system. I do think that it should dissipate as the supply chain ramps up. But I think it'll be with us for a little while. It'll probably still remain at elevated levels next year, although below the current levels we're seeing. I think about it in the context of my portfolio in two ways. You know, one, what's the group of stocks that can benefit from inflation? And then two, because my investment style is in owning high quality companies, are these companies like high quality enough? Do they have the pricing power to cover any cost of inflation?
Fascinating. So I'll give you the problem, well, or the opportunity of natural gas prices, for instance, in Europe, which are feeding through, I mean, many pieces of the supply chain, really. I mean, from beginning to end. It's not as acute in other places. Can you sort of put that in a framework for us, how you look at it, watch it, and potentially invest, you know, into it or lean into it in some way?
It's really interesting, and it has huge implications for the sort of, you know, people of Europe in terms of inflation, their eating, their food, and geopolitics as well. I actually had a super interesting meeting earlier this week with the CEO of one of the largest global fertilizer companies. And they specialize in making nitrogen fertilizer, which is made from natural gas. So one of the ways that I'm trying to benefit my portfolio from this is by owning nitrogen fertilizer stocks, as well as other fertilizer stocks that supply in the key North American market. And so why is this important? Why does the sky-high European price of natural gas matter? Because the North American market for fertilizers depends on imports on the nitrogen side. And because those imports are higher priced, they set the price. And because natural gas prices are so high in Europe, you actually had in the past 2 weeks, two producers stop making or severely curtail their fertilizer production in Europe. And as a result, the prices are jacking up, and that'll start to happen into North America. And meanwhile, the North American producers produce off the Henry Hub, gas, which is like $5, or the AECO, the Alberta gas, which is like $3. So Canadian producers have an advantage there. And so that's going to result in a ton of cash flow. So that's one of the ways I'm thinking about natural gas specifically, as well as inflation beneficiaries for the portfolio.
That's completely fascinating. As you say, I mean, I think we're all going to grocery stores and understanding that food inflation is here for now. I mean, it's a question of where it goes. But let's talk a little bit about the pricing power, high quality, ultimately. I mean, you know, it's not quite a cliche, pricing, purchasing power, but it almost is. That said, it's a great way to invest in companies that actually are able to handle this right now. How do you look at that?
Right. Yeah. So I think for high quality companies, they typically have what's called pricing power, which means they have a good product or good service. And so they're able to raise the price. So think for me in this area, I probably think of like software or the data companies, which are classified as information services, where they have something that's very valuable. So they're able to raise price. They also typically have very wide profit margins. And so even though they're seeing some inflation on the labor side as well, that they're able to more than pass this on. So I think for me, I think that part of my portfolio, I feel that it's very well insulated. I think the one risk there could be that as inflation moves up, you could see rates move up a little bit and discount rates could move up slightly.
So let's dig into that sort of data. This gets into the theme, obviously, of digitalization, and it's being more discussed as infrastructure in a way, isn't it? Now, I mean, we have the bridges and roads and so on, but we're also all trying to sort of bone up on where we need to make digital investments for the digital architecture and infrastructure. That's an area you've been in for some time.
Yeah, that's right. I think companies are all investing in their digital infrastructure in terms of allowing employees, like you can see I'm working from home. And so I'm sure Fidelity is investing in that, in their digital infrastructure to permit us to work from home, as well as e-commerce and to serve clients digitally as well. And so I think that requires a significant investment in the cloud and software. And then I think you also mentioned data. And so I think we move into a world where data is increasingly more valuable, and companies that have proprietary data are able to more monetize or get more value for that data. And so, you know, that data can allow companies to acquire customers, to vet customers, to be more productive, to do different things, but it's more valuable. And so it's a theme that I've liked for a long time. I think there's some very interesting companies in the sector. I think one of my largest positions I own there, I kind of think of them as the worst house, but maybe in the best neighborhood here. And so I think I see that they're the worst house. They're still a really strong company, but I just think that the company's been undermanaged and they're under new management, and there's some opportunities to increase margins to the levels of their peers or reduce the capital intensity. And by capital intensity, I just mean reduce their capital expenditures to the level of peers. And I think those benefits should accrue to shareholders. I think the other benefit here is to deploy capital accretively. And so by that, I mean to invest their capital, because they have a very strong balance sheet, internally in organic projects to grow, or externally in M&A.
Interesting. Are you seeing a lot of M&A? Maybe is that a theme that you're interested in and sort of watching?
Yes, I am. So I find it very fascinating. So one, I've played it directly through owning a capital markets provider, and capital markets and M&A have been very strong this year. So that's helped out. And then two, I've tended to own a lot of the companies that are on the acquiring side of that. And so for me, one of the key focuses of my process is capital allocation. And I look at how do companies, you know, what are their reinvestment opportunities? Can they and reinvest the capital that they generate at high rates of returns? And one of the ways that companies do that is through M&A. And so we're seeing a lot of that. And I think it's benefiting those companies that are able to invest the capital at high rates of return without taking on too much risk for the shareholders.
Your funds do a great job of taking a look, obviously, at North America. We've been talking, I think last time we talked about how Canada was having a moment. I mean, it was really all sort of geared to what Canada had to offer to the world through some of the earlier months of this year, and maybe still is. Your thoughts on that generally, and also what your fund offers, I guess, to sort of take both sides of when one presents a better opportunity to the other? Like, what sort of mix do you have, and what do you see going forward for Canada versus US?
I run the North American Equity Fund. It's the long-term sort of positioning is 70% US and 30% Canada. I'd say in the shorter term, it's a little higher than that on the Canada side, but still mostly geared towards the US. I think Canada's still well positioned here. I think earlier in the year, it looked really good. I still think it looks good. And the reason is I think we have a lot to go in the cycle that's ahead of us. I think that I mentioned that I'm positive on fertilizers. I also think that the outlook for oil and gas is interesting. I think the outlook for financials is interesting. And Canada tends to have a lot of these sectors. So I think Canada, as well as the currency, can do well here. And so I think that argues for good returns in Canada. Now, I think the other thing about Canada is I think that there are a small number of like world beating companies within Canada. And I think that they sometimes tend to get overlooked by global investors that think of Canada primarily as a resource and bank-led economy. And I think that there's an opportunity to own some of these companies in sectors such as real estate services, software, also alternative asset management. There's some different companies that are very strong.
Interesting. Let's go deeper into the financials just a little bit. Maybe also asset management. You know, what are some of the specific opportunities you see broadly there?
Within financials?
Financials, but maybe asset managers in particular.
Oh, I see. So asset managers. So I'm actually, although I'm working at a traditional asset management firm, I'm very excited at owning alternative asset management companies. So think private equity, think private investments in private, like renewables or infrastructure as well. I've got investments in more than one company in this sector. And so I think that, one, it's great to own the manager of an asset management company because it's asset light, right? It doesn't have to invest its own capital. So it has very high rates of return on capital that allow it to grow very quickly without having to raise money. And then two, I think that there's a lot of demand here. There's a lot of demand for pension funds, sovereign wealth funds, ultra high net worth individuals to invest in this space. So there should be lots of funds raised and growth there. And then the third key area, which is important, is right now is a really good time because the public markets are high. So there's a lot of exits of investments where they earn performance related fees.
Tell us a little bit about, I think, just getting to the heart of sort of the consistency that I know your fund has seen.
Hey, that's right. And so I think that the performance since inception has been strong in absolute or versus peers. I think it's 96% peers beaten since inception. I'm the largest shareholder of the fund, so I am well aligned with the uniholders. But it's also been very consistent in terms of absolute and relative performance on an annual basis, which I think is nice for those uniholders that care about that annual consistency.
If we can go back to almost where we began with sort of that overall discussion of inflation, supply chains, there's so many different pieces of it. We talk actually about some of the inputs, like the energy inputs and how that ultimately works. Supply chains are also these wild containers that are hard to find, I hear, everywhere, for ships, for trains, to go across on trucks, everything else. Can you talk about sort of the other pieces of the so-called chain that you like, that you find interesting?
Right. So I heard you mention rails in there. And so I've been a big shareholder of Canadian rails for a long time, Pamela. And I really like railways, North American railways, as a business model. I think a railway has a monopoly on a lot of pieces of their business. I prefer the Canadian railways. I think of them more as a duopoly. I think they have very good sort of length of haul and other network like operating metrics. And I think as a result, they have pretty strong growth outlooks. And meanwhile, I've tended to own Canadian Pacific, which is a large position in my fund. I think the management's very strong. I think there's an opportunity there. They're trying to complete an acquisition of the Kansas City Southern Railway, which I think over the long term will be very beneficial. If they're able to complete this acquisition, it'll result in higher growth, pretty strong geographic as well as diversification by product and strong margins. So I like the railway industry. I think that a lot of the supply chain issues have depressed results a little bit this year and may do so in the shorter term. But I think that demand is still there, and I think that volume is to come. And meanwhile, we talked about pricing power. This is an industry that is very good at getting pricing power.
Right. Yeah. Fascinating. Fascinating that, you know, the discussion of that deal and sort of how, yeah, again, you look at sort of supply chain issues and what that will mean ultimately. Gold, in light of what we heard from the Fed yesterday, the discussion of sort of where and when the taper, then the actual rates being raised and when that all begins. Where does gold fit into this picture for you? Or is it different from before? What does it mean ultimately to your portfolio?
Pamela, I'm not as positive on gold as I am other more industrial commodities. And the reason is I think that gold could struggle to do well over the next year, as right now we have very easy money policies globally, but in the US Fed. And I think that central banks will look to normalize policies over the next couple of years, which I guess in the case of the US means the taper and then, you know, eventually raising rates, which I think is not great for gold. Having said that, I think the economy is really strong. And I think there's certain end markets that are really strong. And we talked about fertilizers, we talked about natural gas and oil. And these are some of the areas within commodities that I'm more positive. I would be a little bit more cautious on commodities that have direct China demand leverage, as I think that China's GDP growth is softening a little bit here as it's still growing, but just at a little bit slower rates as we go forward. So I would prefer those commodities that have strong end markets and are levered more to the U.S.
Can you give any further context to that story of China slowing a little bit? I mean, so much of everything that was tied to commodities in the previous super cycle, I mean, that was the entire raison d'etre for the super cycle in commodities last time around. How does the world look in terms of demand? I know it's a broad statement because there are lots of commodities within, but how important is China as a player? How important are other players in the commodity story?
Think of the current environment as flipped almost from the 2000s, where you still do have strong demand. Supply matters more, but I think in the 2000s, investors did well by owning any producing companies of commodities that were consumed, had high growth in China and were imported into China. And I think now almost think about it as the opposite. Think about getting leverage to the US. Also within China, there is a policy to meet their environmental targets. There is restrictions on those industries that are energy intensive, for example, like coal and chemicals, and so as also steel. So as a result, there's some lower production in these areas. The property market this week, I won't go into detail on Evergrande, looks a little softer. I don't think that event is systemic, but it does look a little softer. And so I think as a result, growth will be a little slower, but also just going back to what I said on the reduction of energy intensive industries, that's really interesting because generally where they're big exporters, and I mentioned for like nitrogen fertilizers, those areas should benefit in global markets because you should see prices actually both domestically within China as that production gets crimped, but also globally go up.
Fascinating. Sticking with real estate, but coming back to our own country in Canada, are there opportunities on the real estate side of things? Is it an area that you look at? We all know the story of home prices pretty well, but are there areas within the overall sector, the real estate sector, that you like?
Yeah. So when we talk about real estate, most of the public sector is dominated by REITs. I tend not to pay as much attention to the REITs because the annualized returns don't typically meet the threshold I'm looking for of 15% per year or higher. But I think in some of the real estate services companies, I actually just literally before speaking with you, got off the phone with one of the larger sort of global real estate services company CFOs. Is really interesting. I think transaction volumes, so think leasing and purchasing of buildings, Like office is still weak, but I think industrial is very strong, and residential is improving as well. So I think you're seeing a recovery here. I think these businesses are good businesses. They're very high. Again, they're not capital intensive because you're not actually buying businesses. So REIT is very capital intensive, but a services business doesn't have to, it's not as capital intensive. So it has a higher return on capital. It can typically grow faster. They generate a lot of cash flow and they've been able to deploy that cash flow very creatively. So I'm very interested in that area of real estate. I think earlier this year, as part of the recovery trade, I had a larger position in a REIT that specialized in malls. And I kind of thought that with the consumer being so strong, that would come back. And that has worked well year to date as well.
How do you tackle currency in North American equity class? Is there hedging or does it impact kind of the way that you're looking at opportunities?
Right. I don't hedge the currency. I think in the short term, I think that there's probably some upside to the Canadian dollar, but honestly, these are hard to call. I don't want to get over my skis, but just typically, when the global economy is still recovering, typically the US dollar tends to be a little more conservative. And globally, because there's more of a cyclically geared economy, ex the US, the Canadian dollar should do a little better. So I don't tend to hedge it. I think in the longer term, I probably would prefer the US dollar, and I like the positioning of the fund being 70 US, 30 Canada.
Excellent. Okay, very interesting. Do you think that most of the economic cycle is ahead of us? Where do you look at this?
Yeah, so I'm not an economist, but the answer is yes, I do think so. I think we're past the early phase of the expansion. But demand is still really strong across all the companies I talk to. And I think that because of these supply chain issues, it's actually maybe elongated the cycle. And so as a result, because we still have like very lean inventories in the system, so you'll have consumers still and companies still trying to buy what they couldn't buy now. And then you'll have companies rebuilding inventories, which will elongate the cycle. And if you look at the Fed, we haven't even started the taper yet, right? So forget about like the first rate increase, which could come probably in like 2023, but they're thinking about starting the taper in November. So I think we still have a lot of the cycle to go. And I think, what does that mean? I think companies' earnings are in a good spot. And I think for us, like that plays to our strong suit, especially being past the early cycle where we employ exhaustive due diligence with our team of PMs and analysts and try to spend my time focused less on sort of trying to pick the ups and downs of the market cycle, but try to pick the best companies that will compound their value over time.
So does that mean the fun stuff that people seem to be interested in buying for leisure, for, I won't say travel so much, but sort of the recreational side? We saw lots of things go through the roof. Nobody could buy a camping tent. I think I tried to buy a paddle actually, which was almost impossible in a couple of places in a small town. Are we going to continue with all that stuff, or have we sort of passed that bit?
I still think there's opportunities there, but it's on a specific company by company basis. And I think some of these companies, so I would own a company that makes outdoor vehicles for leisure. I also own another company that makes high-end furniture for inside people's homes. I think these were considered sort of pandemic winners as things people spent their money on during the pandemic. And I think that immediately after the vaccine, the share prices suffered for a little bit. And then what happened was demand was really, really strong and no one could get supply and inventories are still really lean. And it kind of looks like there's multiple years of growth here. So I think these stocks ended up being great stocks in 2021, whereas that was not the consensus view at the beginning of the year, as people were more focused on sort of industries that had benefited from turning from losers in the pandemics to winners in the recovery.
Does the rising rate environment make you look at certain sectors differently? I think you've discussed some of the different sectors, but as you say, the sort of elongated reopening, normalization, whatever you want to call it, do you worry yet, or is there something that you'll shift to later on? Often equities are ahead on these types of things. How do you look at the landscape?
I find it so hard for me to play those shifts, and I spend most of my time trying to think of the 40 best businesses that I can own that are high quality and can do well over time. You know, having said that, yeah, I do think that rates, like we've got like zero rates and a lot of QE here. So I do think that eventually the economy is pretty good. There's some inflation that probably will move a little bit tighter. And I think as a result, you know, I talked about, I didn't like gold because of that. So I think there's some industries that I may shy away from a little bit. I think rate sensitive industries, like the very defensive sectors, like utilities, like consumer staples, pipelines as well, could suffer a little bit from that. And so, you know, I tend to be light on these areas. I also find that it's hard to find stocks that can compound about 15% in these areas anyway. So they tend to be areas where I don't typically have large investment in.
Right. Okay. Fascinating. Where does this fit? That was that question. Is this a core strategy? What do you want to leave with advisors? How does this sort of fit into one's portfolio?
Right. So I think the North American Equity Fund, it's 70 US, it's 30 Canada. It's a concentrated portfolio of high quality companies. Look, I think it's just, for me, it's my largest core holding. And I use it to compound my own earnings. I think that for a Canadian investor, I like the structure of the fund. It was structured for Canadian investors because the US market, as you know, has been the best market in the world over time. And so it had, and there's tons of high quality companies to invest in there. But I think it's good to have some exposure to Canada if you live in Canada. If we do have an era like the 2000s where the Canadian dollar does appreciate, you wouldn't want to have all your assets outside the company. And I think, as I mentioned earlier, I think there are some Canadian champion companies that do tend to get overlooked by global investors that I think we can own in this fund and do well.
Darren Lekker-Kruger, it's always a pleasure to get an update from you. Thank you. And we look forward to seeing you again in the weeks and months ahead.
Thanks, Pamela. Thanks to everyone who listened. I truly appreciate it. And I'm very grateful for your time and interest.
Thanks for listening to the Fidelity Connects podcast. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to Fidelity Connects on your podcast platform of choice. And if you like what you're hearing, leave a review or a 5-star rating. You can visit fidelity.ca for more information on future live webcasts, and don't forget to follow Fidelity Canada on Twitter. Thanks again. See you next time.